Journalist Jad Sliman of National Public Radio interviewed risk communication expert Peter M. Sandman on March 8, 2021, on public health messaging that aims to persuade the audience at the expense of truth, some examples from COVID-19 and earlier. This is Segment 5, Gilding the Lily, Selling COVID-19 Precautions. For the other segments, the complete hour and 45-minute interview, or other content on risk communication, go to www.psandman.com.
So let's get back to the coronavirus. So you've literally written the book on risk communication, and you're watching, I mean, certainly in my lifetime, I think maybe like in the past century, this is sort of the biggest arena for risk communication globally. And so an early misstep you're seeing is that even after this is clear, this is going to go pandemic, we're reluctant to sound the alarm. What are kind of like, from your perspective, some next, early missteps in messaging?
Well, but there's a lot of examples of that, but let me stick to examples, where the issue of saying false things or saying misleading things is the error, because there are lots of other kinds of errors, like not acknowledging uncertainty and you know, I mean, there are a whole list of things that public health does wrong. But let's stick, you want to go broader, let's stick to things that they do wrong that involve dishonesty.
Yeah, I'm interested, most in like, because that's kind of what struck me, is I think I expected public health messaging to be more straightforward than it is. So errors that fall into that category, not as straightforward, more misleading than they should be.
Yeah, and perhaps, you know, the best generic example from the pandemic is overstating the value of precautions. And certainly overstating the evidence that precautions are working, throughout the pandemic and including today, over recent weeks, as the number of cases went down and the number of deaths went down and the number of hospitalizations went down, we're in way better shape than we were 2 months ago. And obviously there's an enormous interest in what did we do right? Why is COVID-19 less horrific in March than it was in January? And the honest answer to that question is they don't know. If you look at the tweets to each other, it's not like they're secret, but if you look at the Twitter feeds of experts that are mostly attended to by other experts, they talk to each other endlessly wondering what in the hell happened, because they didn't predict it. They thought things were going to get worse between January and March as we went into the depth of winter and vaccination was only beginning to take hold. And instead of getting worse, things got remarkably better. So what do they want us? One thing they want to do is they want to pretend to know more than they know, but that's a different question. The interesting thing is what they want to do is say things got better because we took precautions. And that has been it throughout the pandemic. All improvements have been attributed to taking precautions, and all worsening of the situation has always been attributed to not taking precautions. So things got worse because governors opened up restaurants, and things got better because people wore masks. And that's always the message. If you say, well, what's the evidence that that's true? It's extremely scanty, and it's not as if I'm not arguing that masks don't work, and I'm not arguing that, you know, fully occupied restaurants are safe. What I'm arguing is that these things are very hard to prove. In the real world, dozens of things are happening at the same time. And, you know, you look at states that were extremely rigorous about precautions, like California, and then states that were much more laissez-faire about precautions, like Florida and Texas. And, you know, it's it's hard to make a case that, you know, New York and California did better than Florida and Texas because they took more precautions. It's, you know, it's very, very hard to tease apart all the variables that are interacting and figure out to what extent precautions work. And all the experts know that's hard, and they have reason to think precautions work at least some, but they don't want to summarize the complexity of the evidence. What they want to do is, in a simple-minded way, say, this proves that we all ought to wear masks. This proves that we all ought to socially distance. And it may be true that we ought to wear masks and we ought to socially distance, but it's not true that the things they say prove it, prove it.
So it's not a question of like whether or not these things are protective or that they work. It's a question of like how certain you are and to what extent they're effective. Like
how much they work and how good the proof is that they work and under what circumstances they work. Those are all very complicated, nuanced questions about which they have a lot of data that they don't want to go into because they are convinced that the more you understand the data, the more, you know, well, it's probably, it, you know, they think if you go from having almost no understanding of the data and thinking, you know, that masks are wonderful and social distancing is wonderful to understanding how complex the data is, as you go from total failure, total ignorance to partial knowledge, you're going to get disillusioned and you're going to be less willing to take precautions. Maybe if you get all the way to the top of the curve and you know as much as the experts, you will once again understand why precautions are wise, but they can't turn the public into experts, and they are therefore reluctant to give the public some of the truth because they can't give it all. So they choose to give almost none of it and cherry pick reasons to wear masks and cherry pick reasons to socially distance and pretend there aren't any data that cast doubts on those conclusions.
And it's not, and I think it's such an interesting conundrum because you really can't, I'd never heard this argument before, like you can't really expect the public to understand any of this stuff as well as someone with a PhD. And I guess some knowledge is harmful. Like if you know, I think I'm thinking of like quite early on there, you know, there was so much, a lot of kind of messaging was like, this could spread infection, this could transmit. And there wasn't really a gradient of risk. Like there was times I think during the pandemic where there wasn't like a clear differentiation between like, you know, having a party at your house and like, you know, drinking outside with somebody. Everything was just like a possibility of transmission.
Yeah, like the longer the pandemic goes, the more data they have. And the more data they have, two things become true. The main thrust of the data get clearer and the complexity of the data get more complex. So, you know, I mean, as the, you know, early on you knew nothing and then you thought you knew stuff. And then as you learned more, you thought that some of the things you thought you knew turn out to be not true. And then as you learn still more, some of the things you thought you knew turn out to be maybe true or probably true or true under some circumstances. You know more and more and what you know gets more and more complicated. And your ability to explain it to the public gets more and more discouraging. And your temptation to oversimplify gets stronger and stronger. And the oversimplification that you're going to go for is the oversimplification that leads people to do what on balance you think is best for them to do. So you wind up being you're not going to give people a random sample of all the information you've got. You're going to give them a cherry-picked sample of the information that gets them to do what you think, based on all the information, is the best thing to do.